Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shooting Defence on FMX. I'm your host, Stel, and I've got three guests this evening. First guest is Rodri Giggs. How are you doing, buddy? You good?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, can't complain. Just trying to keep one eye on the United game at the moment. It's a bit tense at the moment, isn't it?
No, yeah. Going to the end by the looks of it.
Squeaky bum time, isn't it? Squeaky bum time. And Mr. Harry from Sofa Sports News, welcome back to the show, mate. How's things?
All good, man. Struggling with this cold weather. I'm all onesied up on my sofa, you know, relaxing. That's what it's all about.
Sofa Sports News, there you go. Wonderful. And our third guest is none other than former Leicester City manager, Mickey Adams. Mickey, welcome back to Shoot the Defence, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, thanks, Stel. Yeah, all good, mate.
Fantastic, fantastic. How's the book going?
Yeah, the sales have gone well, thank you. I've had some decent publicity, and I hope that the people that have bought it have enjoyed reading it.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, you know, we reviewed it a few weeks ago, and, you know, I believe it's a fantastic read, and long may it continue, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Stel. Appreciate that, mate.
Great stuff. Well, let's go on to the weekend's games, and Lady Luck was on the side of four of the big boys as Man United, Man City and Chelsea benefited from fortuitous goals, while Arsenal nicked 3 points against Burnley in the last minute for the third time in a row. I think Harry's got a little cheeky grin there at the moment. Now, Ashley Young's deflected goal against Brighton put United 5 points behind City. Raheem Sterling's winner at Huddersfield moved Guardiola's men 8 clear again, although the England international will be the first to admit he got a huge slice of luck. Meanwhile, at Anfield, Willian's cross beat Mignolet with 5 minutes to go to earn Chelsea a share of the spoils. Now, Rodri, it looked like United from last season until Young's goal was they couldn't break Brighton down. Now, to be fair, Chris Hughton's men were very organised and probably deserved a point, mate. What did you make of United's overall performance?
Yeah, it was one of them stale afternoons at Old Trafford. Obviously, not a free-flowing that we've seen from the earlier season. But, you know, I've seen a few games with Brighton this season. I've been very impressed with how they've defended and how they defend as a group as well. And, you know, Chris Hughton's been about a long time now. He's a very astute manager, coach. And, you know, it was one of them games at Old Trafford that we was lucky to get 3 points, but, you know, we'll take it.
Absolutely. And Harry, Ashley Young really gets the credit he deserves, but, you know, he's a versatile, hard-working player. He's a solid 7 out of 10, isn't he? I mean, he's been a great servant to United.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he arrived at Old Trafford back in 2011, I think it was. But as a youngster at Aston Villa, I sort of felt at the time he's moved to Man United was the right thing. And don't get me wrong, like you said, still, he's been a great servant to Manchester United. But I don't think he's quite lived up to my expectations anyway, and maybe some other people's. But I suppose that's down to various factors like injuries, playing out of position, Louis van Gaal, David Moyes. So, yeah. But, yeah, he's been an excellent servant. He's played wherever he's been asked to, and I suppose you can't ask for much more than that.
Absolutely. And Mickey, City's winning run continues, but this time round, they ground out a result as opposed to smashing their opponents to pieces. Now, Huddersfield were very, very resolute, though. And I know David Wagner couldn't really ask much from his players, could he?
No, he couldn't. I think that Man City are going to have the same problem now. You know, I think that you know, teams are not going to roll over and let them, you know, Man City tickle their bellies. I think that, you know, Huddersfield were well organised. The goalkeeper played well, Lossie. Moy in front of him and Van La Parra, you know, worked really hard to limit the chances that Manchester City had. But, you know, with City, they just had another gear. And you saw that. I think it was a bit of a shock going 1-0 down at half-time. But they picked up the tempo of the game second half. And, you know, particularly Raheem Sterling, you know, I thought he was excellent on the day. So Huddersfield, yeah, give it a good go. And they're going to be like a lot of clubs this year. You know, they're going to be scrapping for their lives. But, you know, I think the signs are really promising for them.
And Mick, I know last season Spurs were the first team to beat Man City, and they pressed them very, very high up the field. How would you set your stall out against this Man City team? They're absolutely explosive going forward, aren't they?
I think that's a dangerous game. You know, I think if you're going to press them, you need everybody doing it. I think it's not about, you know, one man initially pressing the ball. You know, people have got to back them up. But you've seen with the counter and the pace, the, you know, even at fullback, Walker and Delph, Silva, Sterling, Aguero, Sane, what pace, you know what I mean? So it's a dangerous game. You know, I think that what Man City do is if they do get pressed high, you know, and you don't win the ball, then you've got problems because the pace on the counter-attack is lethal.
Absolutely. Now, gents, Willian claimed his goal was a shot. Does anyone actually believe him? And is the criticism Mignolet received fair? What do you reckon, Harry?
Look, we all want to believe that the player meant it. No doubt about that. My head says it was an attempt to stand the ball up at the far post. But my heart says he meant it. And I don't think you can blame Mignolet, to be honest. It's such an accurate effort, whether he meant it or not, God knows. But the ball's looping over there, and I don't think the keeper would have expected it. So I think it's a bit harsh to blame Mignolet for that.
Mm. Rod, was it easy to pick on Mignolet because of his past discrepancies, so to speak?
No, it was like Harry said, it was one of them fluke, and there's no way he meant it. But as a player, you're going to say you meant it, but no, he definitely didn't mean it. But you can't blame the keeper. He got an answer. Maybe he should have done better, maybe a little bit, but no, you can't really blame him.
Mm. Mick, what do you think Jurgen Klopp said to Mignolet at full time?
Well, I don't think he'll be happy. I mean, he wasn't happy. I mean, this was a game that I covered for the Premier League, and you know, I was watching the referees. But you know, Klopp would be more upset with the fact that he tried to make a substitution, and you know, the referee waved it away because he thought it was an act of time wasting. I think that was the big issue. But you know, as far as Williams' shot is concerned, I think I agree with Harry. I think he tried to stand that up at the far post, and if he had it done, I think whoever was at the far post was offside anyway, so it would have been disallowed. But you know, from that angle, I wouldn't blame the keeper there.
Now, I know Antonio Conte said something at full time about, you know, Chelsea having to play Carabag in midweek and then going all the way to Anfield. What do you guys make of this? Because let's be 100% honest, he's got a big enough squad. And Chelsea do have a lot of youngsters, and it's been well documented that they've got a lot of very quality youngsters. Couldn't you have played them in the Champions League, or is it because they're not registered? Does anyone know?
Well, I think you have to announce a squad of 25. So I think it's very much like the Premier League. But you know, I mean, on Saturday, he rested Fabregas, who came on, and Willian, who came on. So he had enough firepower there. I think he was trying to get through the game with some fresh legs. And I expected Liverpool, really, in the first 25 minutes to really get at Chelsea. But you know what, still, they didn't. You know, they sat off them a little bit, you know, a little bit fearful of them. So, you know, you've got to say well done to Chelsea for getting something out of the game. But I think it was a wasted opportunity, because I think if he'd have started with his strongest 11, they might just as well have turned Liverpool over on the day.
Mm. Harry, do you think Conte's feeling the pressure a little bit, mate? You know, coming up with excuses now, because we know last season they only had one game a week and they strolled to the title, didn't they? But this season, Champions League, and let's be 100% honest, Conte came from a league where only one team was really winning it up until recently. So do you think he's making up excuses at the moment?
I think it's been well documented that Conte wasn't able to do the business he probably wanted to do over the summer. Feels like there's a bit of a negative atmosphere around Chelsea, and it's been there right from the start of the season. I see his point. They travel to Carabag, which is quite a long way away, and then they've got to play Liverpool. And I think what happens is when foreign managers come to the country, they can't get their head around that. Because, for example, if you look at Serie A, where Antonio Conte managed in the past, and it's a league I follow really closely, you'll know that they do what they can to help their teams out when they're involved in European competition. I remember an instance last season where Juventus were allowed to move their game back to the Friday so that they would have a couple of extra days rest before they had a major Champions League tie. So I think you're always going to get foreign managers complaining about that stuff. It's just a culture difference. In terms of Conte in general, I think he is feeling the pressure. Look, he done a fantastic job last season, no doubt about it. But having Champions League football to contend with, the emergence of Manchester City under Pep now, Manchester United going from strength to strength, it was always going to be a tougher season. I don't think anybody expected any different.
Fair enough. And Mickey, just going back to what Harry said about, you know, managers complaining about, you know, the fixture schedules and whatnot. Do you think, or have you heard many managers say that, you know, the European exploits have kind of hampered their league campaign?
You've heard that argument certainly with the Europa League, you know, when they have to start so early in pre-season. But I think, you know, for the Champions League, you know, I think it's very, very prestigious, and, you know, as a competition. But, you know, the bread and butter is the league. And I think if Conte is feeling the pressure, I think he's putting it on himself, because I don't detect anything from the Chelsea fans, and you know, certainly not heard anything coming out of the football club that he's under pressure from the boardroom. So I think he's feeling the pressure. He's putting it on himself rather than anybody else. And maybe the press are putting a little bit on him as well.
Yes, true. That's very true. Roger, I remember last season you were saying, especially back in the last season, Chelsea and Liverpool are going to find it hard the following season with European football. Your mystic Meg powers are back.
We always knew that was going to happen, and like Harry says, you know, City have got better, United have got better, Arsenal really stayed the same, Tottenham have probably got worse. So, you know, we all knew it was going to be tough for him, and arguably the squad's weaker. You know, they've lost Terry, who was a big influence in the changing room, Costa, who was a massive influence up front for him. So it was always going to be tough for him. But like Mickey says, he puts pressure on himself. He's a winner. He likes to be at the top. And, you know, he's not there at the minute.
Yeah, good point. Good shout. Now, Harry, you're an Arsenal fan. You know, your win against Burnley, very good win, to be honest. Very difficult place to go to. I know Hector Bellerin tweeted at full-time last-minute winner. Some might say we have cojones, which was a bit of a dig at Troy Deeney's comments about them a few weeks ago, although I highly doubt he'd say it to Deeney's face. Is Bellerin being a bit of a keyboard warrior, or Arsenal finally showing some balls?
It's an interesting one, because whether you think Arsenal have got balls or not, one thing you can't deny is that they battle to the very end, and they go to win games until the very end. And if you look over the past three seasons, you can probably find a hell of a lot of examples where Arsenal have earned points in stoppage time. You know what? Look, it was a difficult game. Burnley have been flying this season. And believe it or not, Burnley actually could have jumped into the top four had they won on Sunday. So that shows you what a great season they're having. Look, Arsenal nicked it right at the death. It was a penalty. There's no doubt about that. I know some people felt it was soft. We spoke to Mark Halsey on our show today, actually, and he was adamant that it was a penalty as well. So that's made me feel a lot better now. I can say it freely. But look, if you win a game in the 92nd minute, you've got every right to celebrate. And it's a bit of banter on Twitter. I don't think too much should be made of it.
Fair enough. Mick, forgive me if I'm wrong, but were you coaching Leicester at the time, manager of Leicester at the time when Arsenal went the whole season unbeaten?
Yes, I was. Yes, we were lucky that season. We got a 1-1 draw at Walkers, and we celebrated it like we'd won the European Cup. I have to say that now, because that was an unexpected point that season. And also, we played them the last game, and we were 1-0 up at half time, would you believe, and lost it 2-1. The second half.
Yeah, I was thinking, because I was going to ask you. I mean, obviously, there's a massive difference between the two sides. You know, Arsenal back then were phenomenal, and now they're not close. But when you look at that side that you guys played against, what can you tell us about the character and the personalities in that team from 1 to 11?
Well, where'd you start? I mean, you know, they were all physical specimens, which, you know, I don't think that the Arsenal side have actually got that. You know, they, if there was a battle to be won, they did it. You know, with Petit and Vieira, they had pace throughout the team. But, you know, I think, you know, Arsenal have got quality players now, but, you know, that invincible side was something else.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Rod, do Arsenal have balls?
Oh. depends what you mean. But no, not for the season. Not for the entire season. No, it's bits and spurts, isn't it? You know, it's a very good result to be honest. Like I said, they played well this year, Burnley. So it was definitely a penalty. He's obviously made a meal of it, Aaron Ramsey. But it was definitely a penalty. He's clearly put two hands on him. But have they got balls? No, 100% no.
Well, we have to let Roddy have his little dig at Arsenal every week. It makes it more entertaining, I guess. But no, to be honest, when it comes to Arsenal, I have to agree with Harry in the sense that they do fight to the end. I mean, the first game of the season against Leicester, I think the past year and a half, Arsenal have actually dug results out, which you never thought they do because of their character and whatnot. But yeah, let's see how the season pans out for them because, you know, as Mickey said, Europa League and all that, it's a long, long, hard slog, isn't it?
I think as well, still, I think with Arsenal, what a lot of people are not realising, and, you know, people are talking about the Europa League being such a massive hindrance to Arsenal, but Arsene Wenger completely changes not only the first 11, but the complete squad when we go into these European fixtures. I mean, the subs bench is unrecognisable. We've managed to win the group and get through to the knockout phase with our second group of players, if you like. And you know what? Maybe Arsenal haven't got balls, but I tell you what, if they beat Huddersfield at home tomorrow and get a positive result against Man United, they've closed the gap in on second, and then all of a sudden, it's not such a disaster anymore.
January's round the corner, though, Harry.
Well, Arsene said today, didn't he, that he's not going to let Ozil or Sanchez go unless something unbelievable happens. And my theory's been for weeks that Arsene will keep them both. We'll make the top four again, and then Arsene will say, you know what, I've got you back in the Champions League, and he'll just walk off into the sunset and say goodbye.
That's a theory, is it? You're just hoping?
No, it's my theory. Because he's been talking a lot about reviewing his performance, which is something he's never done before. Mm. So there's just a few little things that make me think that could possibly happen.
That AGM must have hurt him, I think.
Well, that was a shambles, wasn't it? No. It was clear at that point that he was, you know, it was clear at the AGM that he was the only person sitting behind that table that has a Scooby about football. The rest of them are just dinosaur businessmen.
Yeah, absolutely. You covered that on your show. So, that was a few weeks ago. So anyone that wants to listen to Harry's show about Arsenal's AGM, go on FNX Network. It's there. Sofa Sports News. There you go. Easy plug. Easy plug. There you go. Right, Crystal Palace's last gasp win over Stoke may not have moved them off the table, or the bottom of the table, sorry, but it's given them a lot of hope given none of the four teams above them actually won. West Brom earned an unlikely point at Wembley against Spurs in their first game since Toni Pulis was sacked, while Swansea and West Ham drew against Bournemouth and Leicester respectively. Everton's 4-1 loss at Southampton came 3 days after a 5-1 hiding away to Atalanta in the Europa League. Gary Lineker described Everton as a shambles. And caretaker manager David Unsworth said things have to change quickly. Now, Mickey, Everton fans are very unhappy, as you'd expect, really. And they're well within their rights to feel this way. I mean, we've seen big clubs like Leeds, Villa, and even both Sheffield clubs drop out of the Premier League. And Everton aren't an exception to the rule, are they? They're in serious trouble, mate.
No, they've played 13 games. And, you know, the facts are they've got 12 points. So if you're getting less than a point a game, you're in trouble. And, you know, I think 36 days, is it something like that, between them sacking Koeman and still not having a manager, you know. So I think it is a club in crisis. You know, I think they wanted Unsworth to get the job. I think the powers that be thought that he was the man. They thought that he was going to, you know, rally the troops and get them going. But, you know, it's just not happened. And, you know, the results are speaking for themselves. And even David Unsworth now is talking like a defeated man, you know, whereas before, when in the first couple of days of being appointed, yeah, I want the job, and now he's talking about he wants the board to decide who's going to get the job. And, you know, I'm not really sure they knew where they wanted to go. You know, Sam Allardyce is now the favourite. They're back talking to him. So I don't know why they would do that after rejecting him first off. But I do think that it's got to be a job for an experienced man, because when you look at the changing room and you've got experienced pros in there like Rooney, Jagielka, Williams, Schneiderlin, you know, these big boys, they need a big manager in there to get them going, if they want to get going, that is. And I do fear for them that, you know, they're heading one way at this moment in time.
Sad times at the moment. Now, Rod, it looks like Gary Megson is stepping aside for Alan Pardew to take the West Brom job. What do you make of this probable appointment, mate?
It's a strange one. It's not a strange one, because we've seen it many times of these managers go from different clubs. But, you know, is he arguably better than Pulis? 50% would say yes, 50% would say no. You know, but he did a good job at Newcastle. But when he went to Palace, it tarnished his reputation a bit. But, you know, he might go to West Brom and it might just fit, and he might do very well. But, you know, it's a strange one for me, because is he better than what they've just got rid of? For me, no, not by much. Right. So they're not going in the right direction. If they want to expand and they want to, it's a difficult one, because West Brom are one of them teams like Stoke and like what Burnley have just done. You know, they've progressed, they've gone down, they've come up, and now they're an established Premier League team. They've been finishing from 12th to 11th to 10th, and now they want to go into that further echelon, into the 8th, 6th, 7th, which is very, very difficult. So is Pardew the man to take them? You know, we'll have to wait and see.
The thing is, I think the stakes are so high these days, where if a club goes down, it's very difficult for them to come back up. And we've seen with Aston Villa at the moment, they're doing very well, but, you know, it took them a bit of time to find their feet in the Championship. And the same with Middlesbrough and like even Leeds, Sheffield United, whoever, all those teams down there. So to see teams like West Brom bringing in an established Premier League manager like Alan Pardew doesn't surprise me at all. They had people like Pepe Melwin in the past, and, you know, Roy Hodgson. So they've tried different things, but
for me though, still, it seems to be like a safe option. If they want a safe option, you know, there's no more safer option than Tony Pulis. But, you know, obviously if they're not scoring and they're conceding a lot of goals, then obviously Tony Pulis is not an exciting manager or football stroke philosophy to watch. So, you know, I've listened to West Brom fans on Talksport, and just obviously most of them wanted Pulis out. So it's the football's not been the best. So obviously, can Pardew bring it a little bit different? You know, we'll have to wait and see, like I say.
That's right. Now, Harry, to be fair to West Ham, they've played pretty well in the first couple of games under Moyes. Swansea, however, they look completely out of ideas. I know Boney's return hasn't worked, and they're very reliant on Tammy Abraham, who's relatively young. Now, the goal disallowed against Bournemouth, which looked a little harsh, but when you're down at the bottom, you need a bit of luck, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You do. And you touched on West Ham there. Start with West Ham. They have improved performance-wise, but I'm still not convinced it was the right appointment. They're going to need to start grinding out some results before my mind is going to change. You know what? And it's funny, because maybe if West Ham had waited another week, they could have appointed Tony Pulis. Which, in my opinion, is certainly a better appointment than David Moyes. Look, Moyes has had some excessive criticism, I would say. I don't particularly rate him, but I also think that, you know what, he went into an impossible job at Sunderland. He was never going to fill Fergie's boots. So there's a bit of that as well. I think he's made the wrong decisions. In terms of Swansea, they're just not getting the rub of the green at the moment. I thought the goal they had ruled out at the weekend was harsh. Most referees probably would have given that. But I think their summer transfer business is the issue. I don't think they could have stopped the likes of Sigurdsson and Llorente wanting to go. But it's who they've bought in. And you know what? Renato Sanchez was supposed to be the next big thing. He's looked desperately poor. So far, Roque Mesa from Las Palmas was another one who's failed to make an impact, and they're just heavily relying on a young striker, Tammy Abraham, who could have all the potential in the world, but it's just too early for him to lead a line, and you cannot place your Premier League survival hopes on such young shoulders.
That's right. That's right.
I think one of the big misses, Stel, can I just add to that, is Jack Cork for Swansea, because, you know, when teams are struggling, you want players to be brave. You want people to get on the ball. I think if you look at Jack Cork performing for Burnley, he's the one that sets it all off. So I think that, you know, yes, Sigurdsson, I understand that, and Llorente, but to let Jack Cork go as well was criminal, I think.
Yeah, he's one of those box-to-box midfielders that goes on the radar, isn't he? You know, but he's putting in a performance. And as you've seen at Burnley, he's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he just accepts the ball. You know, I mean, when teams are struggling, you need people to be brave. And you don't want people hiding away. You know, as a manager, you want to see people accepting the ball. And Jack Cork does that for me.
Well, Mickey, what do you think the fundamental problem is at Swansea? Because obviously Clement came in last season, back in the last season. He turned them round. Do you think, is it confidence? Is it, is he made the wrong signings? Well, what do you think it is?
Well, they've sold players. I mean, it's as simple as that. You know, they've sold players expecting to bring other quality players in. And it just hasn't happened. You know, Boney doesn't look fit to me. I have to say, I was down there watching them play Brighton, and the atmosphere around the stadium was so negative. You know, I don't think the fans at this moment in time are buying into what Clement is doing. You know, and even the manager himself, you know, looking at his press conferences, he's not the normal bubbly self. He's used, let's face it, he's used to being an assistant manager at Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, where all he's ever got used to is winning games of football. Now he's experienced the opposite side of that, and sometimes you have to be big and brave and have a front on you. These managers, you know, they take it all on their shoulders, but they don't show it publicly. You know, I think that he's going to have to get himself going before he gets the team going.
Right, absolutely. I agree. Right, so in other news, Justin Kluivert, son of former Ajax, Barcelona and Newcastle striker Patrick, scored a hat-trick in Ajax's 5-1 win over Roda JC. While in Germany, the big story wasn't Bayern's loss at Mönchengladbach, but the thrilling 4-4 draw between Dortmund and Schalke. Now, Harry, you're going to have to be our European football correspondent this week because Jan's off sick with the flu, apparently. But from what you've seen or heard about Clive, do you think he'll be like Lampard and eclipse his dad's achievements, or are we looking at another Jordi Cruyff?
He looks a fantastic prospect from what I've seen and heard about him. But I'm always cautious about trying to predict young players' futures because, you know, it can go both ways. You can either thrive from the name Cliver and want to follow in your dad's footsteps and use it as a real, you know, bit of encouragement as something to spur you on, or it can be too heavy on a young player's shoulders. Look, he's done fantastically well, but again, I worry that maybe the league, you know, look, we can't get a true picture because of the division he's playing in, my opinion. Look at Vincent Janssen, prime example, scoring goals for fun in Holland, came to the Premier League and couldn't score in a brothel, unfortunately. So it's difficult to predict. Like I said, looks a good prospect, but again, I won't be jumping to any conclusions just yet.
Fair enough. Now, Mickey, Dortmund were 4-0 up at half-time and threw it all away. 5 weeks ago, it seemed they were going to end Bayern's dominance, but they've now slipped to fifth in the table, 8 points behind the leaders. Now, how does a manager lift his players after letting a 4-0 lead slip?
Hey, Stel, if you've ever looked through my history, mate, when I was manager in Leicester in the Premier League, we went to Wolves and we were 3-0 up at half-time. We actually lost the game 4-3. So I speak from great experience on this one. I think that they were 4-0 up. So I think the manager really has got to focus on what got them to 4-0. So he'll be trying to emphasise how they scored their goals, what they did well, rather than look at all the negative things that they did to throw away the 4-goal lead.
Fair enough. Rod, 4-0 down, mate. Schalke come back to 4-4. I know that Dortmund were down to 10 men at 4-2, I believe. But that's got to give them a lift, surely.
It has. It's got to give them a great lift. You know, we've seen it before. Once you get one, you can get two. And then when you get three, you know, the other team gets nervous. And it's a great comeback, but you know, to lose a 4-0 lead is a big no-no. You just have to obviously get to the bottom of it and just move on very quickly because you know, a result like that, if you keep it in your mind, can damage your whole season.
Yeah, I know Harry's looking away because I think Arsenal blew a 4-goal lead at one point, didn't they? Was it Newcastle, Harry?
It was at Newcastle, but I must admit the referee gave him a helping hand with 2.
Oh,
typical Arsenal fan, that's it.
Great stuff. Right, AC Milan's goalless draw against Torino meant the end of Vincenzo Montella's reign as manager. The Rossoneri slipped to 7th place and are 18 points behind Napoli. Rodri, Milan has spent in excess of 205 million since Chinese businessman Li Yonghong took over in April last year and have promoted youth team coach Gennaro Gattuso to caretaker manager. Now, Gattuso's managerial record isn't great, mate. I know his Pisa side were relegated from Serie B last season. His most memorable moment as head coach was in Greece where he berated the media during a press conference. I'm not going to repeat what he said, but it was quite funny. Being a Greek-speaking person, as Harry will understand. Last week, we were talking about the Wales job and how an experienced manager should get the job. What about Milan then? Surely a club with their history should have a manager with a great track record, no?
They should. You know, obviously, he's not been given the job full-time. He's caretaker, so, you know, but we all know that he was a fiery character. But you can't have that demeanour as a coach, as a manager. You have to calm down a little bit. You know, you have to be the example for the players. You can't be screaming and pushing people in the face and the antics that he used to get up to. So, you know, it's they might need a bit of passion, and he's got a lot of that, and he obviously knows the club inside out. So we'll just have to wait and see. But it's, you know, for a massive club like that and the money they've spent, you'd think they'd bring a list manager, you know, someone like Ancelotti or some of that ilk. We'll have to wait and see how he goes.
That's right. I remember Gattuso had a little altercation with Joe Jordan. Mickey, who do you think would have come on top of that one?
Oh, hey, listen, no, Joe Jordan all day. I mean, I played with Joe at Stoke City for a brief spell, and believe you me, he was a scary man.
Yeah, well, I had this little discussion with Leon Knight on Twitter. He said that Joe Jordan doesn't have any front teeth; he means business.
He certainly did.
Yeah, top bloke as well.
Adele, can I just say on Milan, I think the problems at Milan are a lot greater than just Vincenzo Montella. Look, they spent so much money during the summer, and there was talk of them mounting a title challenge, but in reality, that was never actually on the cards. You know, they were so far behind where they needed to be, and they brought so many players in at once. They failed to adapt into a team. Where Montella probably is to blame is some of his team selections. A lot of people have pointed to the fact that he keeps starting Nikola Kalinic up top, who, if you cast your minds back, had a dreadful spell at Blackburn a few years back. And he's got a young striker there, Patrick Crotone, who scores pretty much every time he comes on the pitch. And I just don't understand what the guy needs to do to get a game. So that's one of the main things. Another big factor has been Leonardo Bonucci, who many people thought was the missing puzzle piece and was what they needed to push on and kick on and challenge for a European place. Well, in actual fact, he's been terrible all season. Many blaming him for you know, some of the defeats. They've been defensively a shambles. And like Rodri said, Gattuso is a fiery character. I think he will do some good. I think he'll instill some of that passion back into Milan, and whether he can do the job long term, I would probably doubt that as well. But let's see. I just think it's a big story at Milan, and you know, it's far greater than just Vincenzo Montella, in my opinion.
Well, to be honest, mate, I just think that tactically Montella isn't great. I don't know what Gattuso can bring apart from the passion factor. If you look at Inter, you know, they brought in Spalletti. He's done a fantastic job. Sarri's doing fantastic at Napoli. And, you know, Juventus are slipping at the moment. So this would be the perfect opportunity for Milan to get a stranglehold, at least try and challenge for a top four position. But for me, it's a very strange appointment. I know he's a caretaker manager, but even still, at this stage of the season, you know, they've still got the Europa League to go for. Listen, it's a long season and we've still got plenty of time to go, but I probably will be proved wrong. But I wish him the best of luck, and we'll see how Milan do the rest of the season. Now, on a final note, gents, Bartek Borisov, that you probably heard of them, they played Arsenal a few weeks ago. They won the Belarus League title in a very, very good manner. Now, Dynamo Minsk won their final game 4-1, and with Bartek Borisov 3-2 down in injury time, the title would have been theirs if there was no change in the scoreline. Unfortunately for Dynamo, a 96th-minute equaliser gave Bartek the point needed to win the title. Now, this leads us on to our bite back, which we've got our Facebook group involved. And we ask, is that the cruelest way to win the title? And if not, what is the cruelest way? Gents, have you can you remember a cruel way of the title being won or lost? Rod?
I always remember Anfield, Liverpool, I mean, Arsenal and Liverpool, Michael Thomas.
89.
Yeah, I always remember that as a kid. You know, I know Aguero scored, but I think that was more of a, you know, it was at Liverpool. They needed to win. They needed an extra goal. And it was just at Anfield as well. You know, Liverpool was so dominant. And they got the win and they won the league. It was quite astonishing.
Harry, would you agree with him?
Yeah, I'd agree. I would have said the one where Aguero scored, where Manchester United's game had finished and they thought they'd done enough, but I don't like Manchester United, so I can't say that was cruel, if I'm being honest.
So. Fair enough. Mick?
Oh, I agree. I think the Arsenal game always sticks in my mind, the fact that you know, Thomas did the roly-poly at the Anfield Road end, so... That's the one that sticks in my mind.
Fantastic. Well, our Facebook group page got a few results. Ben says Newcastle losing it to United. Looking back now, I feel sorry for Keegan with his breakdown live on TV. Well, okay, that's fair enough. Nicholas Charles says 89, the year of the Hillsborough disaster. Cool for Liverpool, but the greatest triumph in football history for Arsenal. Like everything, there are two sides to every coin. And Giancarlo Bernini, fantastic one here. Deportivo La Coruña and the last minute penalty missed by Miroslav Djukic in 94, which would have won them the title, but it didn't. And I think they waited how long? Another 10 years before they won La Liga. So yeah, those are our unlucky or should I say lucky title wins. There you go. Well, gents, it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys on. Thank you very much for your time. Mick, thank you for coming on the show. Before we let you go, mate, would you like to give our listeners a bit of an insight into your book and where they can purchase it?
Well, yes, at all good bookstores. It's called My Life in Football by Mickey Adams, a really original title, I know, but not my choice. I think it was the publisher's choice. But, yeah, please buy it.
Fantastic. It's a great read, guys. It's a great read. Harry, would you like to give your show a quick plug and your Twitter handle, mate?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at Harry Simeou, S-Y-M-E-O-U. I'm sure Stel will put it in the description. It's a Greek name, a bit difficult to spell. But I also run the Sofa Sports News podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Sofa Sports News _. Something similar to what Stel does, but obviously Stel's is a lot better. Top show.
Oh, stop it.
That's it. Give us a follow.
When's your next show anyway? Is it tomorrow?
Well, we've done a little bonus podcast today with Mark Halsey just to run through the refereeing decisions of the weekend because it was something that was sparking a lot of debate on our social media pages. But we're not doing another show apart from that until next week because my two guys have been struck down with man flu.
Oh, dear. Next Shame week is. On them. Right, Rod, would you like to give our listeners your Twitter handle, my friend?
Yeah, Twitter handle's Rod James Giggs.
Superb. There you go. He's learned it inside out since being on this show. It's fantastic. Well, guys, that's it from us this week. We'll be back this time next week, I believe. You can follow us on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Join it and hit that subscribe button. Thank you very much, guys. Until next time, take care.